I would like to begin by welcoming Texas Farm Bureau President Russell Boehning. President Boehning, thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Gary, and I'm happy to be here. But mostly I'm happy for all the callers that are going to be joining us tonight and have joined us already. We're really looking forward to tonight's discussion. In response to the COVID-19 impacts on agriculture, Congress has authorized $9.5 billion for USDA to help specialty crop, livestock, and other producers. In addition to the $14 billion that's authorized to help other crop producers under the Commodity Credit Corporation. We're very grateful for this support, but as we know, with any new program of this type comes questions. I'll have some questions, and I know many of our callers will have questions tonight as well. Our goal is to address as many of those topics as we can. And we will do that by welcoming some great guests. We're honored tonight to be joined by U.S. Senator John Cornyn. Senator Cornyn is an outstanding friend and champion of Texas agriculture. We are so fortunate to have our senior senator from Texas in such a position of leadership and influence. We all know that his efforts and support were critical to the passage of the relief programs that we will be discussing tonight. Following Senator Cornyn, we will welcome Herb Austin, who is the district director of the SBA's Dallas-Fort Worth District Office. Then we'll spend some time with Veronica Nye and R.J. Carney of the American Farm Bureau Federation. I'm very confident that we have the right people with us tonight to help us understand the workings of these programs and how you can access them. This is a huge topic for Texas farmers and ranchers. The hardships and impacts of the pandemic are very real. A statewide audience is with us tonight, and Texas Farm Bureau is honored to provide this important discussion. So thank you for taking time to participate, and thank you for being a part of our Teletown Hall. So let's get started with it. It's an honor to introduce U.S. Senator John Cornyn for an overview of the congressional efforts. Senator Cornyn is a true supporter and a true friend of Texas farmers, ranchers, and landowners. And we all know he's a great leader for Texas. He has fought for us on the tax code that benefits agriculture and small businesses rather than punishing them. He supported and played a critical role in the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, which we greatly appreciate. Senator Cornyn, we want to thank you for all that you do, and we want to thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, Russell, thank you very much. It's an honor to be with you and with everyone at the Texas Farm Bureau. Thank you for organizing this call. I had the pleasure of seeing many of you when I spoke at the Farm Bureau's annual convention back in December, but I have to say it feels like a lifetime has passed between that visit in San Antonio and now. The last several weeks have been very challenging for our country as we have taken dramatic steps to stop the spread of the coronavirus and to deal with the economic impact of this virus. With all the closures and cancellations, it hasn't just changed our daily routines, it's flipped our lives on their heads. For agriculture, we know that the prices are down for everything, from cattle to cotton to fruits and vegetables, dairy and the number of crops are experiencing a glut of supply with reduced demand. And then there's some meat packing plants which are temporarily closed down because of the virus. And farmers and ranchers and producers around the state are wondering how to survive this new, not a natural disaster, not bad weather, but this virus which has been unleashed on our country. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about what Congress has done to respond to both the public health and economic crisis this virus has caused, and specifically how these new laws support Texas agriculture. So far, the President has signed three laws to bolster resources for our health care providers and support workers and businesses who have been impacted by the economic fallout. The first bill focused primarily on health care and set vital funding to our health care professionals, provided initial funding for development of a vaccine, possible treatments. There are about 70 clinical trials in the field around the world, and to provide for more testing. The second bill focused on more on small businesses and individual workers who lost their jobs or facing reduced incomes through no fault of their own. It also took important steps to improve food security for Americans of all ages. The third bill, and by far the biggest, $2.2 trillion, had the widest reach and included a range of provisions to support both our healthcare system and stabilize our economy. It prioritized our frontline healthcare workers and included funding for our hospitals as well as providing personal protective equipment, PPE as we call it, for masks, gloves, and other equipment. One of the things we are going to learn, I think, on a permanent basis from this virus is we can't depend on the supply chain for medical equipment and pharmaceuticals from China. But there are many other lessons to learn as well. We also knew that we had to provide a financial lifeline to some of the most vulnerable Texans, people who, through no fault of their own, found themselves out of a job because of the public health shutdown.
Sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
And we've also expanded unemployment benefits and direct payments. But we also took major steps to protect small businesses, defined as 500 people or less. A hallmark provision was the $350 billion Paycheck Protection Program, which provided 8 weeks of cash flow assistance to small businesses, including farms. These low-interest loans can be used to cover everything from payroll costs to rent, and if employers maintain payroll as of June, which, of course, not everybody can do, certain portions of those loans can be completely forgiven. So, in other words, they start out as a loan but can end up with a grant. As I'm sure you could imagine, these loans have been pretty popular, and when banks began accepting and approving the applications almost 2 weeks ago, it became clear that the demand for these funds would quickly exceed the supply. So last week, we tried to pass a bill to replenish this program with an additional $250 billion. These are huge numbers. This is not about changing the policy, which has been basically bipartisan. This is just about adding additional funds to what has proven to be a very important part of the CARES Act. Unfortunately, we saw the leadership on the other side block the bill in an effort to leverage more funds for other sources, which are nowhere near exhausting their current funding. I know this is shocking to all of us, but it's hard to spend $2.2 trillion. And it's taken a while for the Treasury to come up with guidelines and for the rest of government to try to facilitate the delivery of these funds to the people who are the targets for these funds. But the Paycheck Protection Program is unique in that it's actually been enormously successful, $21 billion for Texas alone. And today the program ran out of money, and the SBA, Small Business Administration, started notifying banks that they can't any longer accept applications. Well, I'm hopeful that we'll be able to work through this. You know, after every disaster, whether it's 9/11, the terrorist attack on Americans, or the 2008 fiscal meltdown from Wall Street, we've always come together and put together the prioritized protecting our people from partisan politics. And unfortunately, that tendency tends to be eroded at times, but hopefully we will respond to the better angels of our nature and come on board and replenish these funds. So I know you'll hear more about the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, and other SBA loans available to you, potentially from Herb Austin, who's accepted our invitation to join us, and we'll talk to you about SBA products. So while paycheck protection programs are temporarily off the table, hopefully for not more than 24 hours, please don't write these off as an option. In addition to this program, the CARES Act also includes a range of provisions to support our farms, ranches, and the businesses that support them. As we began to discuss this legislation in mid-March, I reached out to Secretary Perdue to request financial support for producers through the Commodity Credit Corporation and other programs. Following the China Phase 1 deal, the administration wasn't planning to provide a third round of freight assistance for our producers this year. So when I spoke with the Secretary, I was glad that he was responsive to what I was asking him to consider. As a result, working with the Secretary, the President, and our Senate colleagues, we secured $9.5 billion in direct assistance for our Texas farmers, ranchers, and producers in the CARES Act. On top of that, we replenished the Community Commodity Credit Corporation with $14 billion, which will help fund programs that ensure our farm safety net remains solvent and provides flexibility for USDA to address unforeseen needs, including another possible round of trade assistance. For our producers who have been battling volatile markets as a result of the coronavirus, this money will provide serious support and hopefully some stability. My understanding is the USDA will announce this week or next the details of the $16 billion assistance package for the agricultural sector as a result. As the USDA begins to implement this funding, including in the CARES Act, I want to make sure that we are serving the needs of Texas agriculture. Yesterday, following input from the Texas Farm Bureau, Senator Cruz and I sent a letter to Secretary Perdue detailing the challenges that many of you are facing and encouraging to stay in contact with our offices and organizations like the Texas Farm Bureau, which advocate for our state's producers. We asked the Secretary to cover every facet of farming and ranching. That includes the entire roundup of the cattle industry from the cow-calf operator to the feeder to the stocker, and also includes the cotton industry, where prices have fallen by one-third since the virus took effect. We requested USDA provide assistance to the dairy industry, which has more product that it can sell right now because people aren't going out to eat or getting dessert at the ice cream shop. We also told them that Texas has pretty much every crop and commodity grown in the country, especially crops to traditional staple crops such as wheat and corn, and we should be the model by which the USDA provides assistance to the rest of the nation. We've worked with several of the stakeholders in Texas, and my colleagues in the Senate, to request assistance for commodity and crop-specific proposals for everything from cotton to cattle and dairy. So I know there are a lot of questions about what the next phase looks like after these first three pieces of legislation have passed. We also need to begin thinking about where Texas ag products can be sold once the economy gets going again. One place to look is China, following the signing of the Phase 1 deal earlier this year. For example, China has already removed the age restriction on beef products coming into the country that's been in place since 2003, in line with their obligations under this agreement. USDA tells me that the U.S. will be exporting up to $1 billion of beef to the market in the future. That's nearly 10 times of what we export now. Right now, our top priority is to replenish the Paycheck Protection Program, which is run dry. Then I'm interested in seeing how the programs passed in the first three bills are implemented so we can fill the gaps and address unintended consequences. And that's why this call is so important. I appreciate the feedback that you can give me on what is working and what is not working, what we can do to make sure that the assistance we provide is meaningful and effective. The Texas Farm Bureau has been an essential partner in all of this about the challenges we're facing, and I want to assure you that I'm here to support you in any way we can. So thanks to all of you for joining this call. Thanks to our friends at Texas Farm Bureau for organizing it. And Russell, I'm happy to hand it back to you, and I'm happy to answer Dodge a few questions.
Well, thank you, Senator. And, you know, I've had the privilege of meeting with you several times, and that's the way you normally open our discussions about answering or dodging, but you very seldom dodge a question. Well, you very seldom dodge a question, and if you do, you find me the answer later. So thank you very much for that. And, yeah, I'll open up with a question. You've already alluded to this when we talked about the payroll protection program and the bills that you worked so hard to pass along with Congress. Do you believe there will be additional COVID-19 bills passed through Congress? Just a general question. And you think there'll be some additional bills?
Yes, Yes, I do, almost without a doubt. The president announced his framework to reopen our economy, and of course it's going to be a very careful process, primarily starting at the local and state level, depending on circumstances. But I can't imagine a circumstance under which we would not continue to try to support both our public health sector as well as our economy. Our economy was really doing well. I realized commodity prices on the farm were very low, and farmers always seem to have challenges from elsewhere. But things seem to be going pretty well, generally speaking, and so then this virus hit us. So I'm pretty confident we're going to have another round of legislation. And what I would ask from you and everybody on this call is please send us your suggestions about what ought to be included in that, because I think there will be another opportunity.
Thank you very much, Senator Cornyn. Yes, sir, President Bainey.
No, I just want to say, you go ahead, pick it up from there, sir.
You bet. Just want to remind our participants tonight that they can submit a question by dialing 0 on their phone's keypad. You will be connected to a Texas Farm Bureau representative who will take down your question and position it for our speakers. Senator Cornyn, what are the challenges in Congress balancing the public health issues with the economic interest? That's got to be a balance that's difficult to find in many ways.
Well, this current crisis is really without precedent in my lifetime, and I dare say all of our lifetime. But it's not the first virus that we've seen emanate from China. We're going to have to work our diplomatic angle and use any pressure we can to encourage the Chinese government to shut down some of these wet markets, which have been the source of other viruses. And in some ways, we're lucky that this coronavirus, as bad as it is, isn't worse. And we know that unless we deal with the source, that this is going to happen again, and we simply can't allow that to happen. So listening to our public health officials, obviously they understand the epidemiology and the science behind these kinds of pandemics. And I think the president and the governor and the local officials have done a good job listening to the public health officials. But obviously this is very contrary to what most of us expect in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We expect the freedom to do what we want, where we want, when we want. But we all understand the importance to our country and to our state for us to comply with the recommendations of the public health officials. So we are in the early stages of trying to figure out how we come out of this. And what I'm hearing from all the experts is that we need to make sure we have adequate testing so we can identify people who have been exposed to this virus, many of whom may be asymptomatic, but yet have produced antibodies which can be identified based on certain types of tests, which may provide really the key to opening up our economy again and getting back to what I would call a new normal. I'm not sure we'll ever get back to the earlier normal because until we come up with a vaccine and we come up with a drug that will actually treat this virus. So this is unprecedented. We're all doing the best we can. I'm sure we'll make some mistakes, but we're trying hard to protect the public health, but also to protect our great economy, and particularly our producers and folks who make it possible for our food supply to remain a safe and secure source of nutrition for Americans, even while we are sheltering in place.
Senator, as you well know, there's a lot of interest from Texas beef producers in these particular programs. Do you have a sense when they might find out the details from USDA, and where would they need to contact to find out that information?
Well, I believe Andrew Cooper in my office, who many of you know, is on this call, and he'd be happy to provide you some of those details, because obviously this is gets to be pretty complex as you try to work your way through that. So let me ask Andrew to share with you some of those details. I don't know if I know he's on the call. I don't know if he's able to say something now or whether we need to do that separately. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Help me out here?
Yes, sir. So the secretary was supposed to meet with the president this week and hash out the details of the proposal. Many people saw the president's tweet from last week saying that the package of about $16 billion would be coming. I understand that the department received approximately 250-plus letters from members of Congress, and so that may push the announcement of the package that we expected this week into next. As USDA sourced through all of that feedback from a lot of producers across the nation. And in terms of applying for that assistance, the best place to go, just as with most of your farm programs, is going to be your local Farm Service Agency office. We can also help provide additional details on that, sir.
Thanks, Andrew.
Senator, we have another question that's come in. Where would you recommend that Texas farmers and ranchers go to track legislative proposals, legislation that passes in Washington, D.C.? Do you have a suggestion, a website or a resource that might help them as these details come forward?
Well, I do, actually, and I would recommend that the website that we have, my official website for the Senate. We try to keep it up to speed. It's United States Senator John Cornyn. Actually, the website is cornyn.senate.gov. And we work, we try to update that on a regular basis and provide the latest and greatest information. You can also sign up for a newsletter that we send out, I think at least weekly, with the latest information on that website. So cornyn.senate.gov. Would be a good place to start.
Labor is always an important issue for Texas farmers and ranchers, and in the COVID-19 dynamic, the availability of workers became a key point of interest for you and other leaders in Washington, D.C. Are you pleased with the efforts to make some of those processes more smooth and easier to get H-2A workers and others to agricultural locations where they can work? Are you pleased with how that's come about?
Well, I know that particularly in a full employment economy, it's really hard to get the workforce that you need on the farm and ranches because it's hard physical labor. But I've been a big supporter of encouraging the administration to provide flexibility and a maximum number of H-2A eligible workers. This has been a very successful program, and while we have been stuck on immigration issues generally, I think there does appear to be broad bipartisan consensus that the H-2A program works well. So one of the things I am concerned about, I was talking to some of my friends and our friends from El Paso, for example, which keep a very keen eye on what's happening in Mexico. They were expressing to me that they don't have a whole lot of confidence in the ability of the Mexican government to keep track of the COVID virus in Mexico. And obviously their infrastructure, whether it's healthcare or otherwise, is not up to our standard. And obviously a lot of our fresh fruits and vegetables come through our Texas ports via Mexico, and a lot of our supply chain for everything from medical equipment to automobiles comes through Mexico. And so specifically what I've tasked my staff to do is, as this challenge begins to wane in the United States, that we need to look for opportunities if there are surplus medical equipment whether it's personal protective equipment or ventilators and the like, find ways to help our friends to the south, because obviously our economies are inextricably intertwined, and that there is a huge outbreak and a problem in Mexico, that's going to affect our ability to import some of the fruits and vegetables and other items that that we depend on here in the United States. So, this, we're all connected here and trying to figure our way forward together.
Packing plants, of course, are a big topic of conversation. You and other leaders are very engaged on that issue. What efforts are you and others putting forth to help keep our packing plants open?
Well, I know the packing plants, unfortunately, have had some outbreaks of the coronavirus and have shut down. We're monitoring that situation very closely and trying to make sure we surge resources where they're necessary, both to isolate people who are infected, but also to allow the other folks who are healthy and not affected to continue to perform the duties of their job. That's a vulnerability that that frankly has surprised me quite a bit. While the food supply has been very impressive, and our everything from the producers to the folks who retail our food has been a really great success story. The vulnerability, there is definitely a vulnerability with the meat processing plants, and we are maintaining vigilance in terms of watching what's happening there and trying to make sure that we don't see any bottlenecks that will ultimately impair our ability to get protein from the ranch and from the farm to the consumer's plate. But that's a work in progress.
Senator, we've seen on the news and elsewhere of the long lines of individuals at food pantries and food banks to get food for their families. They seem to be the most vulnerable in some cases. How can we work with the transportation industry to get food to places where they need it most?
Well, we've spent a lot of time and effort to try to make sure that we bolster the ability of some of our food banks to provide food to people. This is basically our safety net. We've supplemented our child nutrition programs, our program to make sure that vulnerable seniors get access to meals. And we provided at least 21 food banks serving every Texas county to try to make sure that these distribution points for commodities for low-income families and individuals are working. So that amounted to $450 million of emergency food assistance in the CARES Act alone. So we are upping our effort, and hopefully it will be sufficient to demand. But I know the demand has increased exponentially based on the fact that many people are no longer receiving a paycheck through no fault of their own.
We see and so much appreciate the good work of Governor Abbott and our state leaders here in Texas communicating, letting us know what they're doing. What kind of feedback are you in Washington, in D.C., getting from our state government?
Well, I'm in regular contact with both the governor and our county judges and our mayors. Just had a conference call this evening with Sylvester Turner, the mayor of Houston, regular contact with the mayor of Dallas, Eric Johnson, and, of course, Governor Abbott, who's sort of our commander-in-chief there for the state of Texas. We're all working hand-in-glove and coordinating the best we can. I think so far, so good. Our numbers in Texas are concerning, but they certainly don't seem to be anything like what we're seeing in hot spots like New York or New Orleans or elsewhere. But the way I look at it, we're all in this together, and Texans always seem to rise to the challenge every time we have disasters or challenges like this. we help each other out. We we do what we need to do, and we come out of this stronger and better on the other side. So we're going to continue to work with all of our leaders at the state and local level. Now the task seems to be, now that the peak of incidence of the coronavirus seems to be, we seem to be on the downhill slope to some extent, we've got to maintain some of the protocols, whether it's social distancing and personal hygiene and the like. But as we're in a race for a cure and a vaccine, I think the focus is now on how can we safely reopen our economy and get back to what I think will be kind of a new normal.
Thank you so much, Senator Cornyn. President Boehning, I toss it back to you.
Well, thank you, Gary. And Senator Cornyn, thank you so much for your time tonight. We appreciate it. We know that you're busy all the time, but you're probably even more busy right now because you have to do things remotely. And we really appreciate it. We thank you for what you're doing during this time, and we thank you for everything that you've done for the Farmers and Ranchers of Texas. We appreciate your leadership. And I just want to comment, without my prepared remarks, you said something earlier about the opportunities after this, because there is going to be after this. I think I had a call from a good friend of mine, a Farm Bureau member for many years that we served on the board together. And there's a lot of positives out there that we don't need to forget about. We have a lot of things that have happened in the past 6 months or a year. I've talked about some trade deals that have gotten done. And I don't think we need to forget about that, because I think after this, there'll be a lot of opportunities. So with that being said, Senator Cornyn, do you have any closing comments?
Well, Russell, thank you for your friendship, and I still remember my visit on your farm, and where you taught me a lot about Texas agriculture, and I appreciate your leadership as well as the Texas Farm Bureau generally and all of your members. I appreciate every opportunity to come talk to you and learn from you. We are in this together. It's obviously the most impressive part of our response to this crisis has been the fact that we've been able to deliver food to our grocery stores and to our front doorsteps, and that that supply chain from the producers, from the farmers and ranchers to the consumer has been really one of the bright spots. But I know that even in a good year, you all have challenges, whether it's the weather or natural disasters or the like. And so I appreciate your resilience and your the way you deliver for all of us. And I know Herb Austin, with the Small Business Administration Director out of Dallas, is going to be on the call, too, to answer some specific questions. And just know that we will be there to help. And if there are other questions or other concerns, we need to hear back from you, because, as I said earlier, this is not going to be the last piece of legislation we pass. And if there's an opportunity to correct some mistakes, fill some gaps, or do other things, we want to take advantage of that. But we can't do that without your input and support. So thanks, and God bless all of you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time tonight. Thank you. Well, moving right into that, and the Senator mentioned that, so if there was ever a time that we as farm and ranch families needed help, it's now. We're pleased that there are certain programs available to ag producers through the Small Business Administration. Tonight, we're fortunate to have Herb Austin with the Small Business Administration on the line to provide an update and answer some questions. I'll now turn it over to Mr. Austin. Mr. Austin?
Yes, sir. Good evening, and thank you so much for inviting us to join. For me, it's always an honor and a privilege to be on the same stage virtually with the top senator, Cornyn, and it is thanks to his efforts that we were able to get to receive $350 billion in the CARES Act. And as you heard from him, the program has been so successful that in 14 days, we have left every single penny of that money. And so we had 4,000 or close to 5,000 bankers, and some of those bankers had never made one SBA loan. They joined to be part of that bandwagon later on in the program. So we had 5,000 lenders who left made 161,000 loans to small businesses. So the program is out of money right now, as you heard from the senator, but we are hoping to be getting $250 billion in the next stimulus package. So what the program called it three P's, or Paycheck Protection Program. The program was really designed to keep people working, so that employers, instead of laying off people to let them go on unemployment, would keep their folks working up until 8 weeks after the check would have been given to them, after the loan would have been closed and the money would have been disbursed. And the beauty of this program is that most of the loan will become grant, will be forgiven, specifically the payroll portion of that loan. So the loan, the program has been very successful. No more money. We are hoping to get some money very soon so that we can assist other small businesses who I'm sure are already lining up to borrow money. And we also have the other program called the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, which is not a bank program, which is managed specifically and directly by the Small Business Administration, where we can make loans of up to $2 million with a maturity date of 30 years at an interest rate of 3.75%. And those loans are really to assist small business in paying other bills, like other debts that they would have incurred, such as their mortgage, their rent, their utility. So one can actually apply for both loans, one to take care of the payroll cost, and the other program, you can use it to pay other expenses in the business. So both programs are out of money, and we expect to get some money soon, as small business already calling us. You know, the media has been calling us as well, and I try to underline and emphasize on the success of the program, and that is why we no longer have money, because it's been so successful. So this is basically what the program provides, and I know the time is limited, and I look forward to hear any questions that the listeners may have. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Austin. We appreciate that. And, yes, we do have some questions from our participants, and we'll just take them one at a time and address those as best we can. Regarding the Paycheck Protection Program, the banks have been doing a great job of executing the loans. But when it comes to sole proprietors, we understand what's taking place with Schedule C, but there is some clarification on Schedule F, and we still need documentation for the Schedule F loans. Can we get some clarification on what the status is on that issue?
Well, what has happened, you know, initially when I heard $359 billion, seems like a lot of money. You know, GNP of many countries do not exceed that amount. But we tend to forget that there are 30 billion small businesses in the U.S. 30 million small businesses, and most of them are sole proprietorship. So what has happened, the banks had the luxury, and I'm not saying that in a good way, to pick and choose their customers first. So what banks were doing, the program started on last Friday, the 3rd of April, I was a self-employed person, a sole proprietor, freelancer. I worked at a bank, and the answer has been, I got to take care of my big customers first. And it was a shame. It isn't that the bank were unwilling to lend to the small person, the small sole proprietorship. It is that they had, I think of Bank of America or the Chase or the money centers, they had so many customers nationally and so many clients to choose from. So they were actually pick and choose it. So what we expect would happen the second turnaround, it is that all their big customers, that is so-called the customers that have maintained the credit relationship with them, customers that have had other loans with them, so that they have access to their income tax return already. They have access to their profit and loss. So they feel a lot more comfortable lending to these businesses first. What is going to happen now, and I do hope it happens, is that now they start looking at the sole proprietorship. It's got to happen. It's inevitable. Because these people are suffering even more than the medium-sized companies. So that's the reality. That's exactly what happened. You know, as I said, we have a lot more banks. So what we were able to do at the SBA, we were able to put together, as we talked to banks, we were able to ask the question, would you consider making loans to small businesses that are not, with whom you have no relationship? And so we have a small list of banks that are saying, yes, I will assist any business who walks to our door. We've also added a couple of fintechs. You know, those people who do business on strictly on the website. We have the SBA has approved a number of them. And we feel that they will also assist in reaching out to what I like to say, again, not in a bad way, the small guys, the 85% of small businesses that are self-employed. I hope that answers the question.
Yes, sir. We appreciate that. And given the level of high demand and interest that you described, how much more money does SBA expect to need above the next $250 billion that are identified as needed now?
Certainly a lot more. I mean, we are here talking about 30 million small businesses. $350 billion went to only 1.6 million small businesses. As you can imagine, most of all small businesses were greatly affected by that violence. So all of them are in search of some kind of funding to help them stay in business and continue to create employment. So we're going to need a lot more money that is being provided so far.
Mr. Austin, what's the status of making agriculture eligible for the economic injury disaster loans from the SBA?
Well, I know the PPP has been, and under the economic injury disaster loan, it blows my mind, why not? So I think that something is being working out as we speak, I hope, that will allow these firms to also participate in the program.
Okay, next question is kind of a scenario, so I'll work through this and let's see if you can address some of the specific questions that are brought from it. I'm a sole proprietor, self-employed, and don't receive a regular paycheck. How will I calculate my loan amount to apply for? What specific details or documents do I need to provide to my lender?
I wish it was the other scenario where our business tends to peak some months and go down a few months, and we have a way to calculate that. But I did see this question. I tried to analyze it thoroughly, and I just didn't have the answer specifically. But if I know who to send your response to, I will gladly do that in the morning.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can Farm Credit Banks able to give SBA loans right now?
As long as they sign the form, there is a form to be signed so you can be approved to be an SBA lender. And secondly, there is some training involved since everything is online these days. But there is no reason why not. We brought in close to 2,000 new lenders just the last few days into the program. So there is no reason why we cannot get them engaged and involved in the program as well.
Mr. Austin, how long does that process typically take for a new lender to be brought in?
Good question. At the outset, at the beginning, it was taking us 1 or 2 days to get to folks involved. Some of them had actually done SBA loans maybe 20 years ago, so they were already on our list. So it took about 1 to 2 days to get them involved. Then at the end, it took a little bit longer meaning 5 to 6 days. So getting into the program was made very easy. The training in terms of entering the information on a site called eTrain took a little bit longer than the approval process.
As rules and some of the processes regarding Schedule F evolve, are individuals able to submit an amended application if the application has already gone through the system?
Yes, absolutely. We are giving that kind of flexibility to the lenders so to make they are at will to make changes after the fact, yes.
Next question we have regarding interim final rule, you have to determine on net profit. What if you do not have a net profit? Ag is often a break-even business enterprise, so how will that work?
That's a tough one, given the fact that we have never worked with that industry. So I don't know how that would work. That's another question I will have to discuss, take higher up, and get an answer by tomorrow.
Very good. Any suggestions or recommendations for those in the agriculture community? As soon as these new dollars are authorized by Congress, is it important that they react quickly to that?
And that's exactly what I spent the entire day telling to the various callers. Be ready. Be prepared. So read the newspaper. We're not too far away from the president signing the bill. I can give you a time, but it's going to happen. So be prepared. Be ready. And what that means is start to talk to your lender at the outset so that once it happens, you can be the first one online to put in your application.
And where can someone go to find those lists of lenders if there's perhaps not someone in their local community that's SBA approved?
And I'd be more than happy to share. It's on our website, and I'd be more than happy to send it in tomorrow. I don't have the site with me, but there is a site where we have all the lenders that are now participating in the program.
I have a question regarding employees. If an individual's payroll includes H-2A workers, can they utilize these programs to keep workers on their payroll?
And the H-2, I never heard the term before, I apologize. Are those people who have special visa that allow them to work here?
That's correct.
Okay. So they would be considered just like any other employee, I guess. And they come and they work on the farm on a full-time basis, or it's a seasonal type of thing?
I believe more seasonal in nature.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. And I apologize because the fact that we have never worked with that industry, even though we work together with USDA, and we really don't know the workings of that industry much. And I would have to I don't have nothing against sure that it's covered in either interim final rule. I will have to take that with me as well. So we
no problem. Understand.
Yes.
Mr. Austin, how prepared was SBA for this tremendous amount of interest, applications? It had to be overwhelming at points to see that level 1.6 million applicants rush through the process as quickly as they did.
Unprecedented and totally ill-prepared, but we have proven that we can do the work within such a short period of time. Just to give you a sense of the numbers, we nationwide, we do about $30 billion worth of loan guarantees a year. $30 billion. It would take us 14 years or thereabouts to do $349 billion. 14 years. We were able to do that in 14 days. You know, it's just people working 24 hours almost every single day to make sure that it was done and done properly with the right banking being trained to a lot of flexibility and leniency, you know, providing to the bank, you know, to trust their judgment, knowing that later on there will most likely be some audits in terms, because there are always those people who try to, you know, keep their way out. So it was just amazing. In my office alone, we were receiving about 600 calls and emails a day. We are still looking at emails of Monday in the office. We have people working 12 hours a day for 6 days a week since the coronavirus started. And it's just to manage the calls from the banks who want to participate, the small business who wants more information. It was just unbelievable. And we were not the only one. Every single of our 68 district offices had the same issue, working very hard, working very smart to make sure that the small business in America was well served. But it was just unbelievable. As I will look back, hopefully a year from now, and I will say, I would have never thought this could have been possible in 14 days. But we made it work.
Last question. As you look at the 1.6 million applicants that have been received and processed, how much is from the agriculture sector? Do you know that? And how much may be Texas-based? Do you have that level of information?
I do have Texas, but I don't have the agriculture. If we have done any, and I can also provide information for the country, not so much state. We're just starting to get state numbers. So I can tell you that in Texas, we're about 23 billion, number one in the United States. As of yesterday, we had already done 88,000 small business loans in Texas for about 21. And I think as of today, we might have passed the 100,000 mark for about $23-24 billion. And you'll be surprised, the average loan size is less than $300,000. But actually, in terms of the industries, we have a breakdown of industries, but for the country, not so much for Texas yet, for states.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Austin. I now turn it back over to President Manning.
Well, thank you, Gary, and a special thank you to Mr. Austin for spending time with us tonight.
Understand
the programs, and we really appreciate what you guys are doing. We know it's like you said, it's unprecedented, and it's something that the whole situation, and we appreciate all that y'all are doing, and we just look forward to working with you in the future, and, and getting through this. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'd like to now introduce our next two guests, and they're from the American Farm Bureau Federation. Joining us tonight are Veronica Nye, an AFBF economist, and R.J. Coney, an AFB Director of Congressional Relations. Both Veronica and R.J. work out of the organization's Washington, D.C. office. So, Veronica, do you have some opening comments you'd like to offer?
Thank you, President Boehning. This is, it's been stated multiple times that this is an unprecedented situation, and while we know that it's been frustrating for farmers and ranchers to apply for some of these programs, it is important for us to remember that the law was just passed into effect on the 27th of March, and so SBA has been doing yeoman's work trying to get the information out to everybody. As was just mentioned by the senator and by SBA, unfortunately the program has reached subscription at $349 billion. I'll sort of take us all back to April 3rd when the first round of applications were made available, and Secretary of Treasury Mr. Mnuchin said that he thought that it was estimated that the funds would last through June 6th. A few days after, as those applications began rolling in, certainly that timeline was moved up, and by Tuesday of this week, it was clear that the funds would likely run out on Thursday. SBA has made details available. Mr. Austin pointed to the number of applications that have been approved in Texas. SBA has provided some additional details on their website that does break down the businesses by the number of by subsector. And so for the agriculture, forestry, fishing and hunting subsector, as of the close of business on the 13th, which would have been Monday, 27,428 applications were for agriculture businesses. The total amount of approved dollars was nearly $3 billion, and that represented 1.2% of disbursed funds at that time. The average of approved dollars per application for agriculture was $108,000, which was the lowest among the subsectors that were details were provided. That was on 20 different subsectors that agriculture managed to rank the lowest. We do know, unfortunately, however, that as was made mention, farmers and ranchers have not typically utilized the SBA program. They have instead been shuttled to USDA FSA programs. And while those programs are useful in certain scenarios, they've at this point are not good substitutes for the SBA programs that are available. We're working on comparing the details of the USDA FSA programs that the loans operated through FSA to the SBA loans, but I'll give you a few details there too that we've so far brought to congressional attention. And the first of which is that one of the earlier laws that the senator mentioned, which was passed on the 6th of March, deemed COVID-19 a declarable disaster under the Small Business Act. Unfortunately, for farmers and ranchers, COVID-19 outbreak was not declared a disaster for FSA programs. And so at this time, COVID-19 is not an approved disaster for the emergency loan programs operated by FSA. It's also important to note that in the CARES Act, the law did state that no longer would applicants have to prove that they couldn't get funding from commercial sources before they applied for the SBA loan, which is a previous consideration. So anyone applying for the PPP loans or EIDL didn't need to prove that they couldn't get commercial financing. Unfortunately, that provision still exists for USDA FSA loans. Of course, that will be something that we are advocating for and in around for, but that's going to take congressional action in order to get the COVID-19 to be considered a disaster and for those provisions to be lifted as far as needing FSA to be the lender basically of last resort. I'll also mention that the EIDL loans, which the emergency injury disaster loans that were mentioned in one of the questions, the maximum loan amount is $2 million. Unfortunately, the FSA loans, the maximum amount for emergency loans is $500,000. The maximum amount available to farmers and ranchers under a direct operating loan is $400,000. So difference in maximum loan values are, of course, quite significant. We will certainly be putting this at the top of the list, as well as additional technical clarifications. As was mentioned in one of the questions, the guidance that recently was released related to self-employed only mentioned Schedule C, which, of course, most farmers are utilizing a Schedule F, not a Schedule C, and therefore, without some direct clarification, we're left wondering whether or not to refer to Schedule F in application. Another question that was brought up was the number of institutions that are approved lenders. The Farm Credit Services were not previously SBA lenders. And while they hurried very quickly to try to make themselves available and to get approved, only about half of the Farm Credit Services institutions were able to get approved. Unfortunately, we learned from SBA that now that the appropriations have been exhausted, lenders will not be able to get approval to become an SBA lender until those more appropriations are received. So we're working with Farm Credit now to get a geographic list of their different locations that are approved so that our members are able to know which institutions they're able to go to. With regards to PPP at large, there still remain a number of questions as far as technical details. The question was asked about whether H-2A workers are considered as part of the dollar amount of payroll or the number of employees. SBA's guidance thus far has said that those employees who spend the majority of their time in the United States, with the intention, I think, of trying to say domestic workers are eligible for the program. However, different members have reported different things in different states based on their bank's interpretation. I think the concern, as we all know, our friends in banking can sometimes be rather risk-averse folks. And so the concern for those banks might be that if they give a loan on H-2A employees and that payroll, that in fact those wages might not be forgiven as part of the SBA program. And then their customer is on the hook for the remainder of that loan with a 2-year payback period. So there's a lot of questions that remain that we're continuing to get technical details from SBA, and hopefully, of course, we'll be able to get those details made available to our members by the time that the new appropriations have been received, because we know that that has been particularly frustrating to say. To learn that the window of application is available, and yet our members don't have the details available to them to actually apply for the loan. So I think that I will wrap up there. One more thing. I do recall one of the questions is the status of making agriculture eligible for the EIDL, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan from the SBA. Unfortunately, at this time, agriculture is still not eligible for that loan program, and the response that we have received from SBA is that it would take a change in law in order to get agriculture into that EIDL program. And in large part, the farmers and ranchers were excluded from that existing EIDL program because it was thought that farmers and ranchers had the ability to utilize FSA loans, and there was the desire to avoid duplication. So certainly that's on the list. American Farm Bureau and 30 ag organizations did send a letter to Congress and to SBA bringing that to their attention. And my colleague RJ, who is the Director of Congressional Relations that has been working on these SBA issues, can certainly speak to that more. But I will wrap up there and hopefully we'll be able to field some questions.
Thank you very much, Veronica. So, Gary, take over, and let's jump right in with some questions for Veronica and RJ.
You bet, President Bang. We do have some questions ready. Before doing so, I wanted to reach back to Mr. Austin. Mr. Austin, are you still on the call? All right. We wanted to, if he still is. Yes, Mr. Austin, we wanted to thank you for your time. And you're welcome to leave the call now and enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll be moving on to some other issues, but we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much again. Have a good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, we do have a question, I believe. First question, probably for R.J. Carney. It involves the CARES Act, and the question is, are nursery and greenhouse operations included in the relief package in the same way other commodities are included?
So with regards to nursery and greenhouses, one area where there is a difference is, as Veronica mentioned with regards to the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, ag enterprises are currently restricted and not eligible for that program. However, there are some instances which have which allows eligibility for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. And that is a small farm cooperative, also aquaculture enterprises, and nurseries. So that is one distinction that is available for nurseries is the EIDL program. Additionally, there were some questions with regards to how USDA will be allocating funding with its $9.5 billion in addition to this CCC funding. So we do expect to see some additional funding possibly earmarked for the ag, nursery, and greenhouse sector in that $9.5 billion.
Thank you, RJ. Veronica, I found it interesting when you talked about the amount of applications representing agriculture community, 1.6% of the total package. Was agriculture late to the table? Was the information late in getting out? How do you attribute that low level given the economic importance of agriculture?
You know, I think the fact that there's still so many questions remaining that impact agriculture certainly slowed down applications. I'll also mention that SBA's guidance on self-employed operators only came out on the 14th, and here we are on the 16th and out of money. So, you know, that certainly didn't help things. And then to the point where Mr. Austin made that the purpose of PPP or the intent was to try to keep employees employed. And what we know about agriculture is that, you know, the sector of ag that has the most employees tends to be our fruit and vegetable growers. And unfortunately, the current interpretation that H-2A workers and their wages and any foreign workers for that matter that are have citizenship or are domiciled else in other countries, their exclusion prohibits the PPP program from being very helpful for our fruit and vegetable folks to our dairy sector. So I think there's a lot of things contributing to that low turnout for agriculture. And you know, the data that I gave is through the 13th. And so perhaps when the data comes out that goes through the 16th or through the end of the fund, perhaps we'll see a significant jump in the number of agriculture approved loans. Though, given the number of questions that RJ and I have been getting, and I'm sure that the number of questions that are out there, that seems unlikely that we'll see a huge jump in that agriculture approved dollars or applications.
Is there any way, Veronica, to prioritize those agriculture-based applications, somehow put them a little ahead of the line, given the lateness in which they were able to go forward with these dollars initially?
That's a good question. I think that will be an individual bank decision. Because as I think both speakers mentioned, there has been a lot of interpretation left to each individual bank that is administering these loans. So certainly for farm credit banks who are trying to get a lot of loans out to the ag community, they're keen to get those applications moved forward. And perhaps now that, as Mr. Austin said, some of the larger users of the program that were already familiar with SBA programs, perhaps now that they have gotten their applications already submitted, that the banks will have more time and attention to serve to those ag applications.
RJ, is there a role Texas Farm Bureau members can play now in communicating with members of Congress and expressing the immediate need for these relief dollars?
Absolutely. This is a critical time, and you have outstanding representation within your Texas delegation who are highly engaged on this topic. You heard from Senator Corcoran earlier today, and this is the time, especially with the funding for the Paycheck Protection Program expired or completely depleted at this point. This is the time that that farmers, ranchers need to rally and let their members of Congress know how critical this funding program is, especially as you keep hearing that unfortunately agriculture has not benefited yet to its fullest potential what this program was intended to receive. And with that being said, there are some, besides just adding additional funding to the program itself, which is of critical need at this point, we also really need to think about some technical changes that need to occur. And Veronica really laid out nicely in her opening remarks a few of those. And the first one right off the bat is with regards to how the SBA will interpret the difference between Schedule C, which how it's completely defined and written in the interim final rule, with that of farmers who primarily utilize Schedule F. That's something that AFBF is working on getting some clarity on, both through the administration over at the Small Business Administration and also with members of Congress. So that's one area just to highlight. Your personal story, as you've had contact and spoken, have spoken with either your accountant, your tax preparer, or any lenders. Those stories and what you're hearing and the experiences that you have is really what's fueling up the chain through the grassroots to the Texas Farm Bureau, who then can share it with us at the American Farm Bureau and all your other colleagues and fellow farmers and ranchers across the country who are experiencing similar issues. We can then use that to really energize and direct what advocacy, what corrections we are going to be requesting within any request to either a technical change that needs it through laws. As Ronica mentioned with the EIDL, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, SBA got back to us and said they disagreed with our assessment, the Farm Bureau assessment, and any other ag organization's assessment, and even the intent of Congress that ag enterprises, farms and ranches, should be eligible for the EIDL program. We believe that the technical changes in statute were already occurred in the CARES Act. However, SBA and their implementation of the CARES Act disagrees. So now we're going back to Congress asking for a more direct statute that will say agriculture enterprises are eligible for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. So as you have these conversations, as you prepare for the next influx of funding, which we feel confident will come, unfortunately there's a lot of politics in Washington, D.C. That is tying up the process. But be prepared. As you heard earlier, as you're speaking with your lenders, your tax accountants, be prepared in any issues that you have. Please share with the Texas Farm Bureau, who will be sure to pass it up and share with us at the American Farm Bureau level as well. So there's a lot you can be doing right now to ensure that agriculture is at the table and can greatly benefit from this Paycheck Protection Program.
I guess there was some positive news today. I believe Secretary Perdue talked about $2 billion worth of purchases of agricultural products. What can you tell us about that, either of you?
We have we've reached out to USDA for additional details on those purchases. Unfortunately, haven't received details on that yet, but hopefully tomorrow. That $2 billion commitment was mentioned by Secretary Perdue in an interview, and so hopefully we'll get some more details on that. But indeed, good news, and hopefully will allow us to get the fine products of our members to those who need it. As was mentioned earlier, some of the lines and the wait times at some of the food banks that we've seen reported has been rather astounding.
We heard from Senator Cornyn talking about USDA still to announce how some of those specific programs are going to be utilized for that up to $23 billion that they've been authorized. Any insights from AFBF on how those might be structured or some indications of how that might be packaged?
Sure. So AFBF has been highly engaged with regards to the USDA allocations. I would say foremost, our request, AFBF pulled together a letter and shared that with the secretary with regards to the timeliness and the critical need right now of farmers and ranchers that getting financial assistance as quickly as possible into the hands of farmers and ranchers is the number one priority. And so we've been engaged on a regular basis with Secretary Perdue He and his team there are going to be answering that call, we understand, in the near term. We hope that will be coming in a matter of days. With how the funding will be allocated, but that's the timeliness is, I would say, paramount for what we are looking at. With regards to certain areas, we have really been focused a lot of our attention on the dairy and milk sector, the livestock sector, within specialty crops. We also were working closely on and asking for assistance with the cotton and ethanol and biofuel industry as well. So there's a litany of requests and conversations that we've been having at the administration, and Secretary Perdue has been instrumental in answering that, and we look forward to seeing what the final outcome will be. But this is something that we understand how important it is for this funding to get out to farmers and ranchers. So that's what we're directing right now, is timeliness and getting it out as quickly as possible. But we don't have any specific details for how they will be allocated at this point, other than what direction ASBF has listed and shared within our requests.
Well, thank you, RJ. Thank you, Veronica. We appreciate you both very much. And we are at the end of our teletown hall. Thank you for the excellent questions and for your interest in these important issues. We hope the information has been helpful. President Bainey, your closing thoughts.
Well, thank you, Gary. And I just want to close it up quickly and just say I appreciate everyone's efforts tonight to make this possible. Of course, a special thank you to Senator Cornyn, Mr. Austin from SBA, and our good friends and good folks up at AFBF, Veronica and RJ. I appreciate y'all being on the call. Appreciate all that y'all do. You know, we've covered a lot of ground tonight, and that was our goal. And everyone had some great questions. I knew we'd have some, and hopefully we'll have some that maybe didn't get answered. If your question didn't get answered, it will we'll follow up and try to get it answered. You know, Texas farmers and ranchers, we're in a unique position when it comes to this COVID-19 outbreak and the nation's response. We know each of us are battling the impacts of the pandemic on our own farm and ranch, while at the same time we have to keep doing what we do. I've done several interviews just over the past couple of days, and most of the reporters ask, well, what are you doing on your farm or ranch? And, you know, you feel almost, in a way, I feel almost guilty because, you know, there's restaurants that are closed, there's hotels that are closed, there's businesses that are closed. And my answer is, well, we're kind of doing the same things we do all the time. You know, we still operate a dairy, and you know, if you operate a dairy, they have to be milked two or three times a day. If it's time to plant corn, it's time to plant corn. And I know that's going on all across this state and all across this country. So, you know, we're committed to keeping an adequate and safe food supply for this country. And we just hope that we can work through this. You know, times like this remind us of the importance of ensuring this nation's food security. I know that Texas farmers and ranchers are committed to doing this. So everyone that's still on the call and everyone that's still listening, I appreciate you all joining us. Appreciate your questions. Appreciate the things that you do every day. Gary, I'll hand it back to you.
Well, this concludes the Texas Farm Bureau Teletown Hall. Thank you, everyone, for joining. To learn more about these issues and other topics associated with COVID-19, please go to our Texas Farm Bureau website at txfb.org. If you'd like to leave a question or comment, please stay on the line, and you will be automatically sent to a voice mailbox. Be sure to leave your name and contact information along with your comment. Have a good night, everyone.